It was Georgiana, who else, who first clued me in on what was happening at Occupy Wall Street. And it was about mid-October that I first visited, because my thought then was I wanted to visit before they left for the winter. And when I got there, I realized how entrenched they were, that they really weren't going nowhere, to quote Bob Dylan. It was very entrenched. It reminded me of some things I'd never seen before but only heard about. The 10 cities of poverty on the outskirts of Rio and Singapore and places like that. And it also reminded me of the Hoovervilles of the Depression. I was surprised in a few ways. While it skewed to the younger demographic, there was much more diversity of ages and generations there than I had anticipated, which made me feel good and encouraged. Secondly, I found it much more racially diverse than I was led to believe that it was. It immediately established a nostalgic feeling for me of anti-war and civil rights gatherings of the 60s, but with a difference. It appeared to me that these folks were not going to be distracted by sex, drugs, and rock and roll, since they already had plenty of all of those if they wanted them and did not have to fight for them as we did. Nor did it look like they were going to fight amongst each other on matters of gender, race, and generational difference nearly as much as the decades earlier. I was also very pleased to see the presence of unions. I never felt that the unions supported the anti-war or the civil rights movements sufficiently in the 1960s. I think the unions then were, frankly, many of them too comfortable and amongst their rank and file, too racist to really stand in solidarity with those movements. But now the union presence was obvious. If you can imagine this as being the protesters at Zuccotti Park, and then the cops were out like this looking in, and the union people were around the protesters looking out at the cops. So they were performing a good and valuable union service of being the muscle to protect and look at the cops. And of course, another interesting thing is that while the union members were more racially diverse than the police force, other than that, they were basically the same people, mostly male, looking at each other. Some of them wearing the Teamsters or the electrician unit's jackets, and others wearing the blue of the New York police force. But other than that, they were husky, strong men looking at each other. And in doing that, at least while I was there, they were looking at each other, and the protesters or the occupiers were utterly peaceful. I felt an amazing lack of tension in the entire park. And I'd been at that park a few times, and a lack of tension in that park was actually new. I think there was probably less defecation in the park during the Occupy Wall Street than on an average day before, but that's my own idea of what that park was like. You know, it wasn't exactly Versailles before the occupiers came there. The signs and placards were gentle, intelligent, and witty. My favorite was, I'll believe that corporations are human when Texas executes one. That was my favorite. It was almost a meditative environment. One sign said, "This is not a protest, it is an affirmation." And because I'm kind of a sap, I wept a little bit that such a thing was even possible. I returned about a month later, and things had changed. The gathering had picked up some parasites, literally and symbolically. There were now some sort of kind of deranged people on the edges. Some of the placards made no sense. There was a lot more commerce, a lot more things to buy. Occupy Wall Street buttons in great variety, t-shirts, and so forth. There were people with their hands out, though the core was still there and growing. But this time I thought, this can't last. There was a group of people dressed with little pointy hats and feathers and sort of green tunics and so forth, and they had an anti-banking statement on their chest. And they were dressed as either Peter Pan or Robin Hood. And I thought that was very symbolic of the alternative futures of this movement, that they could either be Robin Hood, rob from the rich and give to the poor, and overcome the usurped power of the Sheriff of Nottingham, or they could become, without having to change costumes, Peter Pan, and live in Never Never Land and never grow up. As I step back from this a bit, I thought I could see a bit of the arc of history bending toward justice again during the work of Occupy Wall Street. And I began to feel that when there were the predictable attacks upon them from the right, denigrating the participants as lazy and dirty and worse. Now, all protesters should know, as soon as people call them dirty, they're starting to do something right. That also made me feel nostalgic. It also seemed immediately apparent to me that, unlike some parts of the media were trying to sell, this was not the left-wing equivalent of the Tea Party. The Tea Party, very early on, was completely sold out to the extreme right, to the Koch and Dick Armey's AstroTurf organizations, and then were grafted uneasily onto the Republican Party, where it resides today, even more uneasily. The goals of the Tea Party were the goals of a working class people whose movement immediately sold them out to the rich. There was a cartoon in the current issue of the New Yorker. There was a guy with a long beard and a robe with his placard saying, "The end is near," and a guy in a suit saying, "But what are your goals?" And I always appreciate some of the interviews I heard with Wall Street sort of men on the street interviews saying, "But what do they want? They don't know what they want." And I thought, yes, they do. They want your head on a pike. And you don't want to have to think about that. But really, here's what emerged for me that I didn't see written about or talked about very clearly. And this is part analysis, and like most analysis, it's also part wishful thinking. Occupy Wall Street isn't about goals. It's about consciousness. The Arab Spring was about a lot of people realizing at the same time, we don't have to take this crap. And Occupy Wall Street is about that very same thing. Not Howard Beale in a deranged way from an apartment saying, "I'm mad as hell and I won't take it anymore," but down on the streets with ideas and heart. Remember consciousness raising? It was mostly a term used by the women's rights movement. It seems to me that Occupy Wall Street is about raising the consciousness of everybody. To me, it's the seeds of the 60s progressive movement bearing fruit, which is why it scares some people. It's about that arc of history getting a really new boost toward justice by a new generation. And that's why I call it a homecoming. The problem with the Obama presidency is that America got the leader it needed before it got the followers it needed. Occupying Wall Street is trying to raise the consciousness of the people to do what Obama has failed to persuade Congress to do, because Congress is stuck in the old forms of thinking that cannot solve the problems we face today. Now, what kind of consciousness am I talking about? It was discussed a bit with the death of Steve Jobs. Now, what did we find out about that guy? Now, here is the one guy who was part of the 1% that the 99% seemed to feel was doing some worthwhile things. But what do we know about him? He took a lot of LSD and he read the whole Earth catalog. This is apparently what separated him from Mr. Gates. Now, who remembers the whole Earth catalog? Right? Okay. Buckminster Fuller lives. Well, I went on and found, much to my pleasure and surprise, if you go to wholeearth.com, there it is, on a PDF file, along with Coevolution Quarterly and all those other things. And to me, this is what Occupy Wall Street is about, or the consciousness that informs it. It's talking about that future that the whole Earth catalog saw as possible, and understanding that the time is now. It's to redo some of the past. It's putting the solar panels back up on the White House that Jimmy Carter put up and Ronald Reagan took down. Will it be successful? It has to be. I remember in the 1950s when I was a little kid, I was convinced that I would die in a nuclear war. And I only see now what an awful thing that was for a little kid to be convinced of. But I was. I just knew that all these planes could not be flying over my head without one of them dropping a bomb sometime. And so much of the media was concerned with convincing me of that very thing. Now, I still might. But I did not think when I was 10 years old that I would live to be 63 and there would be no nuclear bombs that exploded during that interval. That seemed to me in 1958 to be a huge long shot. Well, remember the Ban the Bomb movement? Bertrand Russell was the head of it in England in 1958. I realized Bertrand Russell was like the first philosopher I ever saw. And it might have been, and he had a big influence on me as a kid. That's how geeky I was. I was really influenced by Bertrand Russell as a child. But it was that Ban the Bomb movement that slowly raised the consciousness of people, of everybody, to realize how insane this was. And then Stanley Kubrick did his movie about how I grew to, you know, Dr. Strangelove. And we're here, and however things have degenerated, that's one thing we've managed to avoid thus far. And I thought, that was really a change of consciousness. There's a play on Broadway now about the last night of Martin Luther King Jr., right? Heard about that, I don't know if anybody's seen it. Remember why he was in Memphis? It was to support a union of black municipal workers. Remember King's Poor People's Campaign? That's a little harder to remember. You know, nothing about that on the monument. It wasn't successful. And it wasn't successful for a variety of reasons, not the least of which was that a lot of black leaders, like Bayard Rustin, thought that it would dilute the civil rights movement. And he's probably right, it probably would have. But like too many people, they saw what that would lose and not what it would gain. Dr. King was killed at the moment when he tried to organize poor black people with poor white people. Remember when Muhammad Ali was stripped of his crown? It was when his values combined the anti-war movement with the civil rights movement. I ain't got nothing against no Viet Cong. It is of the utmost interest of the 1% to keep the Tea Party from talking with Occupy Wall Street. Occupy Wall Street's biggest message is that the things that separate us are interesting, like race, and gender, and class, and sexual orientation, and even economic theory. But the things that unite us are vital. And that finally is the unmistakable feeling I got from Occupy Wall Street the first time I visited. There used to be organizations within Unitarian Universalism that some of you will be familiar with. One was called LRY, Young Religious Youth, and then it was replaced by an organization called YRUU, Young Religious Unitarian Universalists. It was the national youth group for Unitarian Universalists, and many congregations had individual youth groups within their congregations. Occupy Wall Street felt exactly like a Unitarian Universalist youth conference. Exactly. There was radical inclusiveness. There was geekdom on parade. There was endless discussion of process and consensus and a little democratic centralism thrown in too. There was goofy humor and utter seriousness about the state of the world, about being the change you were looking for. And I am convinced that Occupy Wall Street is represented 100-fold by kids of Unitarian Universalists more than they are represented in the general population. This could not be a mistake. So what is next for Occupy Wall Street? I don't know. Nobody stays in the Unitarian Youth Group forever. But you know, if you talk to the young people that become Unitarian Universalist ministers, they almost always became ministers because of their experience in the youth group. Nobody stays in the youth group forever, but the experience changes you. Let's see where the arc of history bends next. We don't stay in the tents in Zuccotti Park forever. Let's see where the arc of history is bent as a result. And be prepared, ye of earlier generations, to support it as it bends toward justice. The intergenerational aspect of Thanksgiving and homecoming is obvious. In the arc of our own history, there are a few years when your kids are growing up and they're out of the house, and you're lucky if they come home for Thanksgiving. And that's a good homecoming. And then there is that year when they have a home of their own, and you go to Thanksgiving at their house. That's what Occupy Wall Street felt to me. It felt like I was coming home to the place our children had made. May we join together in our closing hymn, which is number 68.